Hour number two. Got a great show for you today. We're going to talk with Matt Barnes coming up a little bit later this hour at about 4:32. Charles Davis, NFL on Fox. We've got a lot of college football that's happened this weekend. And listen, I know if you're a fan of a team that lost in college football, you're probably like, oh, man, that is brutal. If you're a Notre Dame fan, they lose in double overtime, 50-47. You know, on the road at Texas, they should have absolutely no problem winning this week against Nevada. And then, you know, Michigan State, they've got Stanford at home this year. I mean, if they win the rest of their games, depending on, you know, what Stanford does the rest of the way, you know, that could be their big win against Stanford. So the point I'm trying to make is that's a bad loss. It's an overtime loss. It's not devastating. It's not a loss that Notre Dame can't recover from, all right? They can recover from that. They would obviously have to win the rest of their games. And the question is, where's Michigan State going to be ranked in 2 weeks from now? You know, when they get to the Stanford game, Stanford's a good football team, very good. Will Stanford be undefeated when they play them on Saturday, October 15th? So Notre Dame can still rebound from that. It's not like they got blown out. It's not like USC that went and got destroyed by Alabama. They lost in double overtime on the road. All right, so it's not like Notre Dame's season's over. They if they run the table, they still have a chance. So let's talk some more college football right here on the Grant Napier Show with Darius Walker, former NFL running back. Yeah, you see him on ESPN College Football and NFL.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Darius A. Walker. Darius, this is Grant Napier. How are you?
I'm doing well, Grant. It's a pleasure to be with you, man. The way you say that, Darius, man, you'd have thought you were a play-by-play announcer.
Hey, I gotta tell you, man. The one thing I don't like though is, you know, I've never talked to you before, and I'm thinking, okay, this is gonna be great. And then my producer Jay goes, man, you gotta razz him about Notre Dame. I'm like, man, I don't know you well enough to razz you about anything. You know what I'm saying?
I hear that, man. But it seems to be that people, when they see me, that they don't have that same filter that you have. So I appreciate you having that filter. But like, when it comes to Notre Dame football, boy, I get the brunt of it. I certainly do. It's almost as if I'm still playing and could actually have an impact on the game one way or the other.
Hey, look, here's the reality. I mean, I know if you're a Notre Dame alum, if you're a Notre Dame fan, it's hard. But I mean, that was just a phenomenal football game. It was entertaining. It went right down to the wire. And I was just making the comment, yeah, you know what? Texas may be a little bit better than we thought. You're on the road in that environment. And, you know, I really believe this. I don't think Notre Dame's season's over. I still think when you look at their schedule, they got Michigan State on there. They've got Stanford on there. Of course, you know, we don't know where these – I just made a comment before we came on. Let's just say Stanford's undefeated when they get to them in the middle of October. You know, if Notre Dame wins the rest of the games, you know what? Hey, it could still be a hell of a season.
Well, you got to think back, too, to last year with Oklahoma. Oklahoma lost to who? Texas.
That's
last year. Ran the table
and
ended up getting into the dance. So, yeah, it's certainly possible for Notre Dame to still get that trip to the college football playoffs. But as many Notre Dame fans will tell you, one loss is too much, you know, especially in that type of environment and when you're so close in that game. But I got to tell you, Grant, for me, watching it as an analyst and an alumnus of the school, one of the things that I always have disliked is just that two-quarterback rotation where you're trying to figure out who your guy is. You don't decide on one. You play both of them. We saw Notre Dame struggle with it. We also saw Auburn struggle with it in week one. So to me, that just it's never a great thing when you can't decide who your quarterback is.
All right, with that said, should college football fans be surprised when you see, you know, true freshman quarterbacks come in like we saw in the Texas game or, you know, in some other games this weekend and they play so well? Give me your thoughts on that.
I don't believe so. The high school game has changed so much, especially across the country, with how prominent high school football is, that you have a lot of high school football programs running the spread or running pro-style offense. So many of these quarterbacks, while it may be a challenging position, many of them have already played that brand and that style of football before they get to college. So making that transition isn't as difficult. So I don't think you should be surprised really at all when you see a young quarterback, especially a freshman, come in and play well. Most of these guys are prepared already.
All right, let's talk about some of the other games that people were talking about this weekend. Were you surprised by the score of the Alabama-USC game?
I was definitely slightly surprised by the score of the game. Not that Alabama isn't great. I just don't know that they're 50 points better than USC. And so it's challenging and it's difficult when you talk about week one, because everyone is really trying to figure out what they have, who's going to play for them, and who's going to play really well for them. And so sometimes you got to get these kinks out. But I think we as fans, especially when you're watching these games and you say, wow, Alabama blew out USC 52-6. USC must be terrible this year. I think at the end of the day, you got to roll your mind back and say, well, it only counts as one game. It's not, sure. It doesn't have any more of an impact than that one game, and it only counts as one loss. So the team can still bounce back and have a productive season.
Last night we saw Florida State. They were getting manhandled early. They scored a touchdown right before the half. And I want to ask you, as a former player, and I want to talk college as opposed to NFL, yeah. Do you believe in momentum? I mean, how big of a touchdown was that? I mean, you could make the argument that they went on a 30-0 run, so it looked big. But do we make too much out of that, or are you a big believer in that? That's number one. And number two, what did you see as the adjustments? I mean, everyone's talking about Coach Fisher and what a great job he did at half. I mean, that was unbelievable, the way Florida State played in the second half. Give me your thoughts on those topics.
I think that momentum is a true thing, and it's the biggest thing, in my opinion, for college football. I can tell you from my experiences at the University of Notre Dame as a running back, scoring a touchdown going into halftime just boosts that confidence. And so much about playing college football has to do with how confident you are in your abilities and to be frank, confidence in the coaching staff. And so when Florida State scored that touchdown going into halftime, you go into halftime and you listen to Jimbo Fisher if you're on that team. Everything that he says will hit home to you at that moment. And I think that that's what people really don't understand, is that when you're in that locker room and you've scored a touchdown and you have the momentum going in, you feel great about yourself. On the flip side, when you go into the locker room and maybe that touchdown was scored against you, now coach gets up there trying to rah, 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 rah. Some of that stuff may go in one ear and out the other because you're feeling down on yourself. And so I think that momentum certainly plays a big role in how the team performs coming out to the second half. And I think if history has shown us anything with Jimbo Fisher, he knows how to make those adjustments. But I think it really starts with his quarterback and his quarterback feeling comfortable and confident in the pocket.
And then out here on the West Coast, and I mentioned to you and before you came on, that in the middle of October, we will see Notre Dame and Stanford. I just absolutely love Christian McCaffrey, and he's so multi-talented and everything. I'm just curious, for someone that was a running back, when you look at him, what sticks out to you?
I think what really sticks out is the special teams ability. When I think back to my time at Notre Dame and even guys who I played with who were around the same year that I was in college, Adrian Peterson, Marshawn Lynch, all those guys, none of us played special teams. None of us returned kicks. Nobody returned punts. Nobody did any of that. And so I think with the versatility that Christian McCaffrey has been able to show in terms of his game, it really just makes him that much more complete of a player. And so that's what impresses me the most. I mean, he's got the speed, the vision, the ability to do things with the ball in his hands. But the fact that he can go out as a punt returner or as a kick returner and hurt you in that way as well, it just overall rounds his game in ways that running backs really, at least up until now, haven't really done much of that.
Do you feel that was a coach's decision based on the extra added possibility of injuries, and that's why you all were kept off special teams?
It could be. That could be some of it. And I think, to be frank, especially when I'm talking about myself back in my high school years, I never returned kicks then.
Wow.
So it was something that I just never did. And so I can't say for Peterson or Marshawn Lynch, the guys that were my year in the league, if they did that. But for me, as a runner, all my job was to do was to run the football and to play running back. That was it. And I think you see a lot of that specialist in terms of the running back position across the country, where guys are only doing their job. They're not standing up and raising their hand and saying, I also want to return kicks, or standing up and saying that, put me out there, give me an opportunity to return punts. Most guys just want to do what they feel most comfortable, and that's just running the football.
Darius Walker joining us here on the Grant Napier Show. I had Steve Berline on the show a couple of days ago, and I said to him that I thought it was an absolute travesty that the Michigan-Notre Dame rivalry stopped. I'm so happy that they've agreed to play next year and the year after. But to me, there are certain rivalries, there are certain things that should happen every year in college football. And again, I'm not a fan of either school. I don't have a favorite team in college football. But just from a fan's perspective, that's a game that they have to figure out how to play that game every year. What was it like for you when you played in that rivalry?
That's such a good point, Grant, in terms of figuring out how to play that, because one of the things that I remember when I was just a high school football player was watching that Notre Dame-Michigan game. I didn't know much about the University of Notre Dame or even the University of Michigan at that time. Growing up in Georgia, I was a UGA fan. But I always watched that particular game. That was always the game that I sat down with my father and family and watched on Saturday. So it's such a big deal. So to have the opportunity like I did to play Michigan at Notre Dame and at the Big House was really almost a dream come true, because I tell you, Grant, it's something about that Big House, that 100,000 something plus fans in there that really gets the juices going in a competitive way. And so, I mean, I loved it. It's one of the best things that ever happened.
When you were at Notre Dame, and I don't even know if this is fair to ask you, did you consider that to be more of a your adrenaline rush, excitement, or was the game every year against USC? How would you characterize the two?
It probably would be USC for me. And one of the reasons I say that is just because at USC at the time, it was Reggie Bush, Lindell White,
oh, wow,
and Matt Leinart. And so that was a big rivalry for us because those guys were noteworthy stars, big names. And so, you know, myself, Brady Quinn, Jeff Samardzija, all of us said, you know what? We need to figure out how to play better than these guys. So I think those star names really stuck out for us going against USC. So from a competitive standpoint, I think that one probably stuck out a little more, but Michigan was certainly a close second.
What do you think Jeff Samardzija's career would have been like if he had stuck with football instead of baseball?
Oh, man, hard to say. I think he certainly would have been around for a long time when it comes to an NFL career. I think he could have played a long time. But he certainly wouldn't have the health, the wherewithal, and really the longevity, I think, deciding to play football. And so I remember when he was trying to make that decision when we were at Notre Dame, and he asked for my 2 cents, and I told him, I said, Jeff, listen, there's no doubt about it. You should go play baseball. If you've got the chance to do that in terms of longevity and career and life and guaranteed contracts,
thank you.
Forget about football. Go play baseball. So certainly has worked out for Jeff, and I'm really happy for him.
Boy, no kidding. I was just going to say the same thing, guaranteeing contracts. I mean, you didn't have that when you played in the NFL. They still don't have that in baseball with the money they're throwing around. That's a no-brainer. All right, so we got one weekend of college football in the books, and here we are. We're still in early December. Is there a game that you've got circled that you're looking forward to coming up? This weekend doesn't have a good slate of games. Are there any games you got penciled in that you're looking at here still coming up in the month of September that you're like, man, I can't wait for that one?
Well, I'm certainly looking forward to, from my own personal bias, the Notre Dame-Stanford game. I think that could be a defining moment for both teams,
yep,
especially with Notre Dame losing to Texas. So that, to me, is definitely one I have circled and really penciled in. And as a former running back, I'm just a real big fan of Nick Chubb and what he's doing, mm-hmm, at UGA. I don't know what it is about running backs and major knee construction that somehow they can still come back and do it with Nick Chubb and Todd Gurley. So it's something about those knees at UGA and those backs at UGA that really resonates with me. And so anytime Georgia has a big game, I'm definitely following Georgia as well.
And then, you know, I'm looking at the Big Ten and I'm looking, you know, listen, we know, and again, I'm not basing this on a Hawaii game or a Bowling Green game. We kind of get the feeling that Michigan is the real deal. We know about Ohio State. And then Wisconsin beating LSU at Lambeau Field was very impressive to me. I don't know if I would put them ahead of Michigan or Ohio State. But to me, and I know you probably hate to say this, but this is a conference that slowly but surely is getting better every year.
You have to agree with that, because, I mean, when you look at the major conferences around the league, everyone makes this flack and this stick about the SEC. Well, if you look at week one with the SEC, we saw the struggles. Pretty much everybody outside of Bama and UGA really struggled, from LSU to Ole Miss to Tennessee to Florida. So the SEC schools really struggled. But when you look at the Big Ten, I mean, Ohio State's been a powerhouse for many years. We saw what Wisconsin did to LSU. Michigan and Michigan State both were powerhouses. Iowa played well at the beginning of the year. So that conference is certainly on the rise, and things are looking up for the Big Ten.
And then there's a lot of criticism that we've heard this weekend, and I think it's justified, about these preseason rankings. And do we really need preseason rankings? I mean, how good are we at ranking teams before the season even begins? What are your thoughts on that?
You have to have some sort of basis in terms of basing it off of last year, returning starters, returning players, returning coaches, that sort of thing. I think there has to be some sort of rating system for that, and you have to give some credence to having returning starters and whatnot. But to base the entire season and to think that at the beginning of the year, the teams that rank in the top 10 or even the top 5 will stay that way, I think is unjustified, because teams change so much throughout the year. So I think we need the rating system. It's just maybe we shouldn't focus so much on it at the beginning of the year and really anoint teams when they get a top five ranking at the beginning of the year, because you're really just kind of giving them respect from what they did last year.
All right, take me back to your days at Notre Dame, not including bowl games. Talk to the fans that are listening about having a bad loss or a close game similar to what Notre Dame had the other evening, and then having it bounce back the following week. Talk about that process throughout the week and how difficult it is.
Well, I can give you a real good example. We played USC. This had to be my sophomore year. We played USC, and many people come up to me asking me about this, but we lost to them on what became known as the Bush Push, when Reggie Bush
That's
pushed
right.
Matt Leinart over the line.
That's right.
So that was one of the times where not only was it a close loss, but it was so much up and down that I felt as a player that nothing else compares to that. And so after that game, it was very easy, I think, for us and really understandable for any college football player to be down in the dumps. But we were able to go on a run after that. And the way that we were able to do that was kind of goes back to what we talked about when I first got on, is you got to understand that a loss really only counts as one game. And so coaches instill this in their players. Players know this themselves from listening to their coaches at the collegiate level, that you got to go one game at a time. And even if you lose one, you know you got to understand that you got to have a short memory in this league, because just as much as you can lose a game and bounce back, you can also win a game and bounce down. So
sure.
It certainly happens from a week in, week out perspective in college football.
I've talked to Tim Brown about this on many, many occasions about his days at Notre Dame, and I'm just curious because I'm fascinated. I was just talking about, you know, how many players in the Sacramento area have gone on in just the last 3 or 4 years to play really big-time, you know, college football. We've got a starting lineman at Alabama this year, Jake Browning, the second-year quarterback at Washington, who started last year as a true freshman, and I go on and on. And, you know, I've talked to, you know, you coming out of high school and the choices – that you had to made, but you had to make, and then you chose Notre Dame. Is it like the first day on campus? Is it the first day in that environment where you know that you made the right choice?
Wow. I don't know if it's the first day. It certainly wasn't the first day for me. I got to tell you, Grant, the first day for me at school was one that was pretty interesting. Growing up in Georgia, so I grew up in Georgia with like an urban background. So I grew up with a lot of people that quite honestly looked like me. And so when I got to Notre Dame, I think the African-American population at Notre Dame was like 3% while I was there.
Wow.
So when I was when I had my first class, it was in an auditorium of about 100 and something students. And I remember sitting down in there and looking around this entire room, and I was the only black face in there.
Wow.
And so I did what any self-respecting, you know, teenager, early 20s-year-old would do. I packed my stuff up and left immediately without sitting through the rest of the class. I called my mom and told her she's got to get me out of here.
No kidding. Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. And luckily, she talked me off the edge. And so I use that example to say that going to a place like Notre Dame, there's so much rich history and tradition there that after you've been there a year or 2 years, it starts to dawn on you. It really does. And when I go back now and see not only what the program is, but what is happening around campus and what's happening with the athletes, you get like choked up a little bit because I was a part of that. And so I think you really recognize it maybe more once you leave, at least in my opinion. You kind of recognize it more once you leave, because people want to know not only what it was like to be a football player at a place like Notre Dame, but they really want to know what it was like to be a student athlete and then what your life is like afterwards. And so I think that what has really resonated with me the most is probably my time as I rethink on it and think about it. After the fact.
That is very interesting to me. And I've talked to a lot of athletes, both African-American and Caucasian, that have, you know, played at Notre Dame. And you're the first one to bring this up. And I find it to be fascinating. I've probably talked to Tim Brown, you know, 50 times over the years, and he's right. Never discussed this. But then again, I've never asked him the question I just asked you. When you're at Notre Dame and when you leave Notre Dame, you go into the NFL, I guess I'll ask you the question now and try to put me in the frame of mind back then. If you could do it all over again, would you change anything about where you went to college?
Not at all, because I'll give you my top five, and I was really lucky as a high school senior to kind of have the opportunity to go anywhere. So my five official visits were Notre Dame, Stanford, USC, UGA, and Ohio State. And so my biggest second school was Ohio State. It was around the time when Jim Tressel was there, and he had such an impact on me when I went on my recruiting visit and stuff there. But when I look back on my time at Notre Dame, and especially my time after Notre Dame with my current career and where my life is now, there isn't a question, there isn't an issue or anything in terms of regret, any kind of regret in terms of where I went to school. I know that for me personally, that was the best decision, and I would happily quickly do it all over again to have that opportunity.
Well, that is awesome. I really enjoyed this. It's great having you on. And you know what? Next time I have you on, we'll just bust Jay's chops. All right. It should be easy to do, right? We can pick 1 of 10 topics. It shouldn't be hard to do, right?
Amen to that. Absolutely.
All right. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming on the show.
Sounds good, Grant. Thanks. Have a good one.
Yep. You too. All right. Darius Walker joining us here. Interesting. And I mean that. I've talked to, I can't even tell you how many athletes I've talked to, you know, about Notre Dame, and I've never heard that story. I've never really, and I used to go to Notre Dame every year to cover. Bowling Green played Notre Dame in hockey every year, so I was doing, and they played Notre Dame in basketball 1 year, and I did all the games on radio, and actually played lacrosse at Notre Dame. And again, and I say this with all sincerity and all honesty, I never even used to think about that, but then again, why would I? Because I don't walk in his shoes. I find that fascinating that he would call his mom and say, get me out of here. That's very interesting to me. All right, we'll be right back when we return. Matt Barnes will talk Kings basketball next here on the Grant Napier Show. All right, we are continuing right up until hour number 4. Been a good show. We're going to talk with Charles Davis, the NFL on Fox, coming up at 5 o'clock. But right now, we welcome Matt Barnes to the show as he is back home playing with the Sacramento Kings. Matt, it's Grant Napier. How are you?
Grant, how you doing? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing good. Take me through the process. You're 36. You keep yourself in great shape. And I'm sure you had a lot of things, you know, going through your head after Memphis. And you signed 2 years in Sacramento. So take me through the thought process. Is this kind of like, hey, you know, you're from here, you grew up here, and you want to end your NBA career here? Is it as simple as that?
Yeah, I mean, it was just a situation, you know, being traded to Memphis from the Clippers. And then we just had a hell of a year in Memphis. So, I, you know, going into free agency, I didn't really know what to expect. And I mean, and randomly enough, you know, I was in Sacramento at my sister's house with my kids for the 4th of July. And, you know, it's when I got the call and made it happen. So it's an opportunity to come back home. You know, it seems like a lot of guys are getting to do that this season. A lot of guys are, you know, able to go back or going back home. I thought it'd be a great opportunity with a young team, you know, a coach in Dave Yeager I really respect. And, you know, we went to war, you know, for each other last year. So I'm happy with that. And then really just a rejuvenation of the city, the new arena, you know, all that played a part. And I'm excited to be back.
Matt, talk about Dave Yeager and how important it is that he's the coach, because he has a ton of respect for you. When I've had him on this show, he said phenomenal things about you. How important was it when you made this decision that he also was the coach of the team now?
You know, it was a situation, you know, where we kind of both thought we were going to be back in Memphis. And, you know, next thing I hear, they fire him. And then, you know, the deal they said they were going to give me from mid-season was kind of off the table, you know, so it was just kind of, we kind of both talked at that time, like, wow, okay. And then, you know, DeMarcus has kind of been on me for the last few years trying to get me back here. And, you know, once I saw he signed with the Kings, you know, I texted him and congratulated him and told him, I was like, hey, put a good word in for me. And he's like, you know, I will. And, you know, kind of went from there.
Matt Barnes joining us here on the Grant Napier Show. I think you know, I don't think I have to tell you, the perception of Matt Barnes and the reality of Matt Barnes are two different things.
And night and day.
Yeah, and I say that because I think that people hate Matt Barnes until, you know, Matt Barnes plays for their team. Then they love you. And, you know, I talked to Eric Hasseltine, a good friend of mine, the radio voice of Memphis, and he said, let me tell you something, man. He goes, Matt was the glue in our locker room when we had all of these injuries. The guy was a consummate professional. And the thing I've always gone by this is I go by what players say. You know, right. I've always had conversations about this. What do players say about Matt Barnes? What do the guys say that played with you? And the reality is you won't find guys that you played with that say bad things about you. They love playing with you. Does the perception of you, does that bother you?
It does. You know, I think now that I'm getting older and I have kids, you know, I'm just, I think the NBA needs superstars like Steph and LeBron, like they need kind of villains like me. You know, I kind of have my lane. I have this vilified role, which, you know, a reputation is earned, whether good or bad. And I think early on in my career, I was just a physical player, really willing to do absolutely anything to make it in this NBA. And I think people don't understand my journey and my path to get here was never easy. So, you know, my play reflected that. And, you know, so I earned a reputation early on, and now it's just, you know, you run into a string of bad luck off the court, and, you know, on the court, you're the certain perception, and I'm the bad guy. But like you said, you know, when people get a chance to meet me and talk to me and get to know me in the locker room for my teammates, you know, I've heard nothing but, you know, best team I've ever played with, you know, guy I would take in the foxhole, all that kind of things. And I really pride myself on that because although I feel I've been underpaid and kind of moved around a lot, like you said, the one thing you can take is I know that the guys in this league respect me and, you know, want me to play on their team.
Matt Barnes joining us there on the Grant Napier Show. I know there were, gosh, I don't know if I have enough fingers on my hands, how many times that you thought that you would be staying with a team and you didn't get the deal you wanted, and then you would sign for what you thought was below market value. I mean, gosh, that happened to you almost every year. And the perseverance and everything you had to go through going from team to team to team, when you look back on that, that just had to be unbelievably frustrating.
Right. It was just it was frustrating, but at the same time, you know, I looked at it, I turned it into a, you know, just a motivational factor when I worked out and, you know, wanted to continue to get better. But then to look at it, too, I mean, I'm not even supposed to be here, and I'm going to my, you know, my 15th NBA season.
Unbelievable.
You know, so if I've had to move around from team to team and experience different things, I'm still living my dream. You know, I'm getting paid a lot of money to play basketball and stay in shape, and, you know, I really can't complain. So I look at every game, you know, as a gift, as a blessing, and that's why I play. You know, I leave absolutely everything out there on the court when I play.
You keep yourself in great condition, but you are 36. I don't want to say you're old, but this is more of a young man's game. What do you bring to the table for the Sacramento Kings?
I just think I'm someone, you know, although I'm 36, I didn't really get a significant amount of playing time my first 4 to 5 years. My first, you know, real playing time was, you know, with Golden State. And maybe that was, you know, my fourth and fifth season in, you know, so I kind of feel like I had a lot of energy in the tank. You know, I'm someone that keeps myself in shape year-round. I run a lot. You know, I swim, I bike, I do everything to stay in shape. And I know my role. And I think that's what got to me to where I'm at now. I think everyone, you know, everyone wants to come in and be Kobe or be Steph or be KD. And odds are you're not. You know, something Doc Rivers told me and always stuck with me is be a star in your role. And, you know, I know exactly what my role is every night. You know, and that's to go out there, bring energy, bring toughness, play defense, knock down threes, and be a leader out there. And I think I'm good at that.
Well, so. And I'm glad you said that. That's very interesting what Doc Rivers told you as we're talking with Matt Barnes. You've been in a lot of different locker rooms. You've been in good locker rooms. You've been in bad locker rooms. You know how important that is. And I love the fact that Vlade went out and got guys like Garrett Temple and Anthony Tolliver. Are they all stars? No. But you know what? In their respective locker rooms, they were regarded as the best teammate. You know, I hear great things about you in the locker room. And I love the fact that, you know, with Dave Yeager here, and you maybe you can talk about this a lot more than I can. You know what? He's a great guy to play for, but he's firm. And listen, if you don't play defense, you're not going to play. And if you're not going to be a professional, you're not going to play. I love the culture that's changing here with the Kings. Can you comment on that?
I think it's great. You know, like I said, I really have a lot of respect for him, what he went through last year as our coach. And, you know, someone that, you know, along with myself and Vince, kind of just kept the team going, you know, playing 28 different guys in one
amazing
season. You know, NBA record. And still, you know, staying in the playoff race. You know, you take your two stars away, you trade two of your other starters away, Mark and Mike tear stuff out for this. It was just a crazy season. You know, so I have a lot of respect for that, but I like just his point of view, you know, the way he approaches the game. And the roster in Sacramento is very talented. You know, there's a lot of stuff said about DeMarcus, but I think to me he's the best all-around center in the game, and I'm very excited to get a chance to work with him because I see a lot of my angry younger self in him. And I just, you know, to be able to focus that in, put all your energy in the right direction for the team, for the city, I think once he does that, you know, he's going to be an MVP candidate. So, you know, I'm really interested in working with him and helping him out. And like I said, he's been trying to get me here for years. So, you know, I'm finally here.
I was talking about this with Doug Christie the other day. We were naming the players that we felt were the biggest mismatches in the NBA. And that's the one thing that you can't argue with DeMarcus. I mean, you know, you played against him on a lot of different teams. I mean, the mismatches that he creates are among the biggest in the NBA. I mean, I don't know how you guard the guy.
No, I mean, just hands down, he's, you know, 6'11" and can do everything. You know what I mean? Big and strong and nasty, and you can't teach nasty. That's what I love. You know, like I said, I think it's just, you know, we can get him to focus on the right things. You know, you take his energy out on the other team and, you know, control himself on sometimes, you know, cut down on the tees. And like I said, it's just a lot of stuff that I did at a younger age. You know what I mean? So I think he respects the fact that I've been there and I've done that and I was able to change. I mean, although I'm still going to get technical fouls, I'm not, you know, I'm not a league leader anymore in that, I have to say. So
right.
I think it's good to see, you know, to, like I said, to get him on the right path. And I mean, we go as he goes. So I'm excited about that.
Talk to me about defense under Dave Yeager, because I had Elston Turner on a couple of weeks ago and he said, you know, the reality is we spend about 65% of every practice on defense. Can you talk so about that? Because this team, you know, Matt, the Kings have been just awful defensively the last couple of years. I mean, awful.
Well, that's something I can definitely say will improve, you know, right off the bat, as, you know, we do. And it was refreshing to me because I'd never been on a team that spent so much attention to detail on defense. And I think, you know, with the game being so young now, these kids in college don't know how to play defense. They don't know how to play help side defense, principles, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, he breaks it down and we drill it every single day, even shoot around. So it becomes second nature. And, like I said, it's going to be fun.
I'll let you go on this. We have talked a lot about your mom and the battle that she faced and you and Bobby together. I just got to believe your mom is just thinking how phenomenal it is that you're going to end your career in Sacramento.
Right. I mean, I love it. It's a gift. It's a blessing.
Yep.
And like I said, just to really be here when the team starts to turn the corner and open the new arena, I'm glad to be home, Grant.
Yep, awesome. Matt, thanks very much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, that's Matt Barnes. Of course, Bobby and Matt had a golf tournament called Athletes versus Cancer. They both lost their moms to cancer. And he's back. He's back home. We'll come back and we'll take some phone calls next. All right, we are with you right up for the full hours. I think we got you off at 6:30, right? We got baseball tonight, so I'll be with you until 6:30. So it's all good. We take your phone calls, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Hey, let's get to Marcus. Marcus, welcome to the show.
Hey, what's going on, Grandma? How you doing?
I'm good, Marcus. What's up?
Hey, you know, I mean, I just wanted to put a stamp on that little interview there. I'm actually one of Matt's former teammates, played together in school. I played with him. You know, pro-ams that used to have there. You know, I played against him in, you know, celebrity tournaments that used to be there at Arco Arena. And I'm going to tell you guys something, man. If you want somebody on your team that you want to go to war with on any day of the week, that's going to be the guy right there. I've never seen anybody else in my career with as much heart and as much fight in him as Matt. And, you know, I take my hat off to him. You know, I'm glad to see him back home. And, you know, if anybody can get DeMarcus' head right, I think it'll be that guy right there. So I'm glad to see him home, man.
All right. Thanks very much for the call. Let's get to Rick. Hello, Rick. You're on with Grant Napier.
Grant, how you doing today?
I'm well. Thank you.
Hey, just some concerns. You know, I hate to play devil's advocate here, but, gosh, you know, we brought in Hall of Fame coaches. We brought in world champion point guards. And, you know, now we got Matt in here. Matt's a great guy. You know, I'm just a little skeptical how this thing's going to turn around.
Well, it's not going to turn around this year. You know, it's not like the Kings aren't going to win 50 games this year and everybody's going to ride off into the sunset and talking about, gee, everything's fixed. It's not going to work like that. It's not happening this year. This is a step this year. It's a step, hopefully, and I don't know because I don't have a crystal ball, hopefully in the right direction, and they build on that next summer. So that's just the reality. The Kings are, and again, Rick, we have to call it the way it is. They are currently a team that is not expected to do much this year. Dave Yeager is going to take a full year probably to implement his system and its philosophy. And, again, I know fans don't want to hear that, but I'm being truthful to you. That's just the way it is. Let's hope that the Kings at the end of this year, where we all get together and go, wow, finally, the team finally is heading in the right direction. They finally look like a professional basketball team. They finally have this. They have that. I don't have the answers to that, Rick, but I'm just saying that's what the goals are this year.
I love Matt Barnes. So like the previous caller said, hopefully he can help DeMarcus grow up a little bit and mature a little bit. All right, thank you, Grant.
All right, thank you. I mean, I'm really hoping that DeMarcus's experience in the Olympics is a phenomenal platform for him moving into this year with Dave Yeager and with, you know, Aaron Aflalo and Temple and Tolliver and, you know, Matt. I mean, I think the culture of the locker room is going to be a lot of different. I don't see any reason in the world why, you know, Dave Yeager and DeMarcus Cousins are going to have issues. I mean, to me, if I'm looking at this from DeMarcus Cousins' perspective, I think Dave Yeager is a perfect coach for him. I think when you look at the players that played for him last year in Memphis and the years previously, I mean, he's very well regarded. The players love playing for him. He's a firm guy, but he is a player's coach, but he has his rules. He has the way things are going to be run, and everyone's going to follow the same rules. So, you know, it's pretty simple. You know, he expects you to play hard every day, and we're not going to have what we had last year. I keep on saying that. I'm not going to be going on the air every day, you know, at 3 o'clock and getting phone calls from Kings fans that are upset about the lack of effort. All right? That's just not going to happen. So, you know, does that translate into 50 wins? No, it probably doesn't. It's still a talent-based league. You know, it's not like the Kings don't have any talent, but they have to use their talent and maximize their mismatches. You know, they have a huge, huge, huge mismatch, you know, when DeMarcus Cousins is on the floor. I know that just based on the way Dave Yeager coaches, DeMarcus is going to be a better defensive player under Dave Yeager. All right? I mean, I firmly believe that. I believe that this team is going to be a better defensive team under Dave Yeager. I firmly believe that. Matter of fact, I would almost guarantee you that. That's just Dave Yeager, that's the way he coaches. So, you know, I mean, it's 3 weeks until training camp. I'm not going to go on the air and say they're going to win 50 games because I don't believe that. You know, I'm not so sure I would go on the air and say they're going to win 40 games. But the point I'm trying to make is they have to be a lot better than they've been, and they've got to set the groundwork, which is Dave Yeager's job. Dave Yeager's got to build a foundation. That's his job. And the players will buy into it. And if the players don't buy into it, as Vlade Divac said, you're either in or you're out. And the players that don't buy into it will be out. I mean, it's really that simple. Well, maybe it's not that simple, but that's the way I'm looking at it. All right, Trevor, you're on with Grant Napier.
Hello.
Hello.
Hey, Grant. This is Trevor.
Hey, Trevor.
You know, I totally agree with what you're saying about Yeager. He brings a tough defensive mind state. The other thing that I think is really important is you saw the way Memphis was able to get the ball inside to Zach Randolph and Marc Gasol. And that's going to be huge for DeMarcus because I feel like DeMarcus didn't catch in great spots last year. And so I think that's something that's being understated is how good they were at getting the ball inside to those two big guys. And I think that's going to help DeMarcus out a whole lot.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you. DeMarcus was in too many spots on the floor last year, in my opinion. And I'd like to see him, you know, most of the time, not all the time, go to his strengths. And we all know what his strengths are. You know, I'd like to see him play 18 feet in, either face the basket because he's so good off the dribble, or post, demand a double team, either get the opposition in foul trouble or you kick it out. Listen, I know DeMarcus can shoot the three. I've seen him do it. I'm not crazy about it. I'm just not.
I agree 1,000%. Great scores, whether it's a big or it's a guard. When they catch in certain spots, it's pretty much a bucket. And DeMarcus is such a talented guy. He can score in many ways.
Yes, he can.
Sometimes that's to his detriment because he's doing a little too much.
Yeah, but you're right. But I think this is where Dave Yeager comes in, because I think that Dave Yeager, you know, will be able to manage that. There was no management going on last year with the coaches. It was almost like they were playing pickup basketball every night. There was no coaching going on last year. So that's going to be totally different this year.
Absolutely. And one more thought is, you know, like you said earlier, this is a players' league, and the Kings, I'm high on Willie Cauley-Stein. I think he made some progressions last year. I did think, you know, Carl and his staff didn't do a great job with him, but you saw the flashes. He
right.
could be a good weak side guy next to DeMarcus. But the big thing is these draft picks got to hit. They got to start hitting draft picks.
Trevor, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Hey, it's 4:57. Time to visit your Twin Peaks Grill for the coldest beer, great food, and all the sports you want to see. Charles Davis, NFL on Fox, next here on The Grant Napier Show.